The following podcast contains adult subject matter. Listener discretion is advised.
Guys, I'm sitting here in the Mego booth, like, behind the scenes, talking with Paul Clark, a.k.a. Dr. Mego. Sir, how are you today?
I'm doing great.
Man, so Mego and Joe Namath being here at the convention and, like, the relaunch of this toy line, this is, like, a huge deal. Like, going into, like, an exclusive deal with Target and stuff like that. Tell me a little bit about, like, the recreation of, like, this iconic toy line.
I have been making replacement parts for Mego action figures for 20 years. Ever since I found out I wasn't the only grown man who was collecting old toys that wanted the toys back from his childhood. And I was thinking, I found a website called MegoMuseum.com. And it's all these guys that are in their 30s, 40s, and they're buying Megos. And a common complaint was they were missing boots, gloves, the capes were all frayed, you know, played with. What you're supposed to do with a toy.
Exactly.
And they said, you know, I realized there's more loose Megos out there than there are parts to go around. As opposed to, like, the G.I. Joe collector base, which actually has a lot of the same boot, the same guns.
Right.
You know, it's so this. But so I figured out how to make replacement parts.
So when you're, like, making the replacement parts and you're kind of, like, building this community, what was it like kind of finding your people?
Well, we all look like perfectly responsible adults until you show us Mego. And the funny thing is, I always say it shows it's hard to target because they're all over the country. They're every demographic. I was in market research, so I know all about demographics and how to segment. And they're in every zip code. They're in every town. And you can't really identify them unless you show them Mego. And yeah, you could line up 10 guys, and one out of 10 will see the Mego and be like, oh, that's so cool.
So you have, on your side of the toy kind of conversation, you have guys like Kevin Smith and, you know, really famous, right, like, nerd celebrities that talk very actively about Megos. On a show like Comic Book Men, you're seeing them, like, just cheese out over, like, Batman playsets.
Absolutely.
And stuff like that. You know, what is it like knowing that you are now a part of, like, just the history of, like, this company?
This is like being called by the manager of the Mets to come down to the ballpark, put on a uniform, and hit some balls around.
Yeah.
I mean, Marty called me up and said, I'm bringing back Mego, and you're part of it.
Did you have a little bit of a panic attack?
Yeah. Luckily, I had made Star Trek Megos in 2007 with Diamond Select Toys. And I worked with Mattel on Retro Action Superheroes. So I already had the bodies tooled and I had accessories. So I already knew how to do this. So I wasn't just fanboy. I was actually able to do the manufacturing.
That's amazing.
So, but it literally is. I mean, look, you can make Megos, but you're not really making Mego. You know, NECA has done it. Classic TV Toys, you know, and they just, they don't really get it. You know, working with Marty, it's a whole nother level.
So the interactivity, the idea that, you know, sure, there's tons of people that are going to keep this in the box and, you know, collect it. But, like, the point of this is you guys want it to be a toy.
Yes.
Like, you know, what's it feel like when you see a kid get their hands on something like this?
It is awesome. I've been doing toy shows for 20 years, and little kids would come up and they'd see all the stuff I do, and they go, "Oh, how much would it be to, like, make a Superman?" And I say, "Is this for you or for your dad?" And they'd say, "Oh, it's for me." I go, I'll put the parts together. Here you go. Here's a Superman."
That's awesome.
Because kids should play with toys.
You know, it was cool. We were just at Entertainment Earth, and they have these little pin mates.
Yes.
And they're little wood toys.
It's the Fisher-Price little people.
Yeah. And when they have this big playset that they've created just for the con and everything. And, you know, you hear so many people talk about, well, kids they have video games, they have apps or whatever. But when you put a toy in front of a kid knows what to do with it.
Kids, by their very nature, like to diversify. I have to, you know, I have 23 nieces and nephews. I'm from a family of seven. So is my wife. So we have seen a lot of kids growing up. It doesn't, kids go from one thing to the next. Video games are very attractive, but there are times even they will walk away from that.
You know,
still play Little League.
Yeah. Interestingly enough, with video games, like, my kids never play the same game for more than a day or two. You know, they're going from game to game to game, so.
But a toy.
Oh, sorry, go ahead.
A toy gives you the tactile sensation that the video game doesn't. And they let their, and it gets their imagination out for a walk. Instead of following a story, they get to make their own.
That's cool. Using your imagination is so awesome, and I think we have the brains behind the operation, Marty, ready to go here.
Yes.
So
okay.
I'm going to pass the mic over to him. And, man, thank you so much for talking with us.
My pleasure.
Marty, why bring Mego back today, you know, now?
It was time. I look up at the calendar, and I haven't got many more years left. But having said that, when I say it's time, over the course of the last 30-odd years, people have made Mego-type toys. Whether they be Action Mego characters that we did and or other characters in our art form. And I wish them all well, I mean, independently. But no one did it under a brand. And people came to me to go and say, why don't you do it? I said, because at the end of the day, the way I would want to do it would have to be, but not just a collectible, but would have to be to reach out to the mass so the kids could do it. And the only way that happens is we need quantities. You can't do those type of marketing presentations without having substantial quantities. So then Target came to us and said, Marty, we'd love to bring Mego back, and we're going to support you. And here's how we're going to do it. And they gave us an entire plan. And that just was perfect for us, because you were a character that would drop at the retail level of a competitive to every other product that's out there. You do a collectible like we're doing at $14.95, at $15.95. When you do a collectible, it's $49.95.
Yeah.
Kids can't afford that. And they can't collect them with that. Because in the best case, they only have one. If you only have one, you can't create the good guy versus the bad guy.
Right.
You can't create the collection. You can't create the war. You can't create the storyline. You can't create the fantasy. So you have to be able to have three, four, five, six pieces. And the only way to do that is they have to be the right price.
So I love the focus that you guys have on, like, you don't just want this to be a collectible. You want this to be a toy. Like, you want kids to play with it.
Absolutely. Scott, we want this to be a toy. I mean, that's what we do. That's what we're in the toy business. I mean, I've been in the toy business all my adult life, and probably most of my childhood as well. So it was, for us to say we just want to be in the collectibles, we create the collectible business. It's a little bit far-fetched to say that, but before us, before we did Batman and Spider-Man, two separate companies, Marvel and DC, before we did Star Trek and Planet of the Apes, which is Paramount and Fox, there wasn't stuff being collectible. The closest thing you may have on a collectible basis were the corgis, with the die-cast metal characters, but nothing in the character business. And the way it becomes collectibles, it has to be a play pattern. If you haven't got a play press, you can get more than one, it doesn't become collectible.
Right.
So that's how we looked at it. And we want to be able to reach the mass. And Target has allowed us that privilege.
So going to, like, the license, you have, like, so many separate licenses from, like, DC and, like, you know, the Star Trek and stuff like that. How has that process been different now than it was when you first started Mego?
Well, you know, when we first started Mego, we used to get the massive toy license. We had everything in the category. Now, we're getting bits and pieces of it. Number two, we can't get it all. I mean, for example, we can't get Star Wars or we can't get Marvel. I mean, that's wrapped up by Hasbro. And, you know, they're very protective of their position. I don't blame them. Well, that's their business. So having said that, we knew we had to go out and get other characters that Mego did not do, but became icons of the 70s, 80s, and 90s, so we could turn around and make it in the Mego vein. For example, in the 70s, Jimi Hendrix was considered the greatest rock guitar player of all time. But no one cared. I mean, except when Eric Clapton said, Jimi Hendrix was the greatest guitar player. And Jimmy Page said Jimi Hendrix was the greatest guitar player. So all of a sudden you had the, we consider the great ones today, anointed him. He has now become an icon because of that. So we got Jimi Hendrix, you know, in terms of that. We went back and we didn't do Charlie's Angels. We went out and got Charlie's Angels. Charmed wasn't around then. We went out and did Charmed. We had to be able to fill in the gaps of both female and male, because at the end of the day, it used to be just a male business. It no longer is. It's a male-female business. Right. It's a 65-35 business, a 70-30 business. I mean, we walk around this place, see all the women here. It's unbelievable. So we had to be able to turn around and look at the female position. We had to look at the icon position. We had to look at the power positions of what other characters that we didn't do, the people we want to see today.
So when you look at, like, kind of how nerd culture has shifted, you know, from, like, the 80s to where it is now, where it's way more inclusive and, you know, you see more people of color, more women, like, all of that sort of thing, like, this brand seems really in a prime position to push out into that culture. Like, what do you think is kind of your, like, your forte to reach out to people that are outside of the typical geek culture and nerd culture?
You know, I've had three or four careers in the industry. I considered my Migo days as my Beatles years, because we had all our huge hits of the 70s that quite clearly are still around today. I mean, Marvel is still doing all their characters and more. So is DC and more. Planet Apes keeps coming back. Star Trek keeps coming back. So those are the halcyon days of what we were doing. When we go into the second phase, what I call the wings level, you haven't got that level of in the career that, but we did the product like Power Glove. I don't know if you remember the Power Glove, but
oh yeah,
it worked with a Nintendo 3D system. It was the first virtual reality product. We did sky dances, 30 million sky dances over the course of my wings days. That's a huge number, no matter what product you're doing. That turned into the Flying Superheroes, which really jumped us off into this area. So we look at, and I'm very, very clear of this, we are inclusive. That's the key. I understand my audience as well as anybody else, and I put myself right with them. I don't separate. I'm walking in this show. People go out, stop me, give me to take a picture, an autograph. Absolutely. I know who I am. I know what I was. I know where I'm going. And I understand that at the end of the day, the cool guys who don't become the nerds become the dummies.
Yeah.
I use another word. And so when you get to my time in life, you understand that it's the nerds who are the cool guys.
Right.
It's, you know.
So you have this incredibly fierce and incredibly loving fan base. Like, how has it been to, like, you know, come to San Diego, you know, to the biggest, you know, pop culture convention in the world and just have the reaction that you've had? Like, I was in your panel yesterday, and I mean, I've told this story to pretty much anybody that'll listen to me. I have never seen a panel get mobbed at the end like that. Like, what has it been like to just receive all that love this week?
You ever see a grown man cry?
Yeah, all the time when I watch Trolls. So. Well,
so that's exactly how I feel. I mean, it's very tough to keep the emotion in. I was, Joe Namath and I started off as kids together, you know, hanging around New York City. He went out to win not only the Super Bowl, but he went into the Hall of Fame. He's had a pretty tough life physically, because his knees have been banged up, his shoulders have been banged up across the board. But he's been an incredible survivor over the course of the years. And I haven't seen him probably in 20, 25 years. I, on the other hand, same thing. My life has been a roller coaster. On the top, crashed and burned, come back, crashed and burned. It's part of what the whole thing is. So when I called him up and said, let's go do this. And he said, absolutely. And he didn't even say, I got to think about it. Let me check with my people. Let me see what my kids say. He just went, absolutely, let's go do it. That's what it's all about. It's all about not ever forgetting who you are and who your friends are and hang out with guys like you got, like a Joe Namath, who's probably one of the greatest, nicest people you ever met.
I mean, in the panel, I watched a lady get emotional talking to him, and he got up and walked off the panel table and went and gave her a hug. Like, what kind of celebrity does that? Like, that's an amazing thing to see.
And it was just totally natural. When he did that, I was going to go and do the same thing, but I didn't want to crowd his space.
Right.
You know, it was his moment, and I knew exactly where he was coming from because I felt the same way. But I didn't get up and do it. He did.
Yeah.
Right? And I was going to, okay. And then it became, okay, he did it, now you can go do it. But I didn't want to get into his space. So that's exactly what he is.
Yeah.
There is nothing phony about him or fictitious. He's very, very real.
So I have to ask, will there be a Joe Namath mod fashion line like there was before? The 12 pieces of, like, amazing leisure suits and things.
I have to tell you, until this show, there wasn't.
Yeah.
I mean, we had no plan on it. But having seen, because people brought to us, they showed us the old stuff.
Oh, they're
and
amazing.
The names. And they and how the names, like wide receiver, you know, clipping, all the football terms for different costumes. And so it was not going to be, but there is now.
Oh, that's amazing. I'm super excited about that. My dad has never once cared about anything that I've done for this show. And as soon as I told him about the toys, that was the first thing he asked me. He's all, are they going to make the fur coat? Or are they going to make the leisure suits? I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm hoping so. So, well, Marty, thank you so much for your time today. How can people basically find you on, you know, line to start buying these? And where will they be able to find them in the future?
Well, you know, we have something called the ambassadors.com, MegoAmbassadors.com, which they can sign up. And so they get all the inside information before everybody else gets it. It's not going to be a year before, but it could be a couple of weeks before, a week before that. We have Mego, www.mego.com, which they can check on it. And we're going to start put more and more of those areas out so they can go out and do that. But right now, as of probably August 1st, they can go to target.com and buy everything.
Awesome. And you'll be able to pick them up, I assume, in, like, the Target stores as well.
Every Target store is having it.
In your toy aisle next to all the lame toys, right?
No, actually, it's going to be at NCAPs. They're opening up with NCAPs for us in LA, 100 stores.
That is awesome. I can't wait to go to my local Target and buy one.
I just want to sign off with one thing. I don't know who hears me or doesn't hear me in this podcast, but Target has been the most wonderful partner a manufacturer could have to make something like this happen.
Yeah.
They've been totally supportive. They've been 100% behind us. And we just thank them every day.
That's awesome. Well, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it. And I'm very excited to have some of these in my life again.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the Thinking Outside the Long Walks podcast. Join us on Facebook and Twitter to get behind-the-scenes information for exclusive content and to be notified when new episodes are available. The thoughts and opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the individual and do not necessarily represent or reflect those of the Thinking Outside the Long Walks podcast, Baron Space Productions, its partners, or affiliates. The Thinking Outside the Long Box podcast is made available by its creators, Juan, John, and Gabe. The podcast is edited and produced by Juan, and Albie is the co-executive producer. The Thinking Outside the Long Box podcast is a Baron Space production.